What are the four places in Shemona Esrei when we're supposed to bow? That would be the beginning of the first bracha, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Ve'Elokei Avoseinu. The end of the first bracha, Baruch Atah Hashem Magen Avraham. The beginning of Modim, and the end of Modim, Baruch Atah Hashem Hatov Shimcha Ulecha Na'eh Lehodos. Why are we not supposed to bow during any of the other brachos of Shemona Esrei? There's two reasons that the Shulchan Aruch gives. The first reason is that it's yuhara. It looks like arrogance. It's like saying, I'm more firm than everybody else. It's going to make people think that you're a show-off. And so that's why we don't do it, in order not to appear like a show-off. The second reason is that if you add on to the number of mitzvos that we're supposed to do, the number of mitzvos that the authors of Shemona Esrei told us to bow, so then you might end up subtracting also. In other words, it's like following your own heart rather than following the Torah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, as explained by the Chachamim. And so in order to realize that we're following Hashem's Torah, not our own Torah, we accept Hashem's Torah when it tells us to do something that's strict, and we also accept it when it tells us to do something that's lenient. If we come to be strict when we're supposed to be lenient, then we might end up being lenient when we are supposed to be strict. The concept of yuhara just refers to arrogance. Sometimes it appears to things that look like they're arrogant. The Shulchan Aruch and Mishnah Berurah note a number of things that are forbidden because of yuhara. Some of the things on the list: women wearing tzitzis is one, taking more than three steps back after Shemona Esrei is a second, bowing down during the other 17 brachos of Shemona Esrei is a third, bowing down at an acute angle, less than 90 degrees, you know, between your head and your toes, that's a fourth. You're not supposed to bow so deeply, otherwise it looks like you're trying to be more firm than everybody else. A fifth one is a person who carries around his lulav and esrog all day long. Looks like he's a big being a show-off. And number six is a person who wears all white clothing on Shabbos, white pants, white shirt, white kippah, white everything. That tends to look show-offy, and so the Shulchan Aruch says not to do it. When is it forbidden to invent prayers? So the basic rule is that as long as it's clear that you're not trying to change or add on to the prayers that were composed by the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, the formal prayers of Shemona Esrei, so then it's permitted. So in other words, if you want to just spend a few minutes talking to Hashem in your own words about the things that you care about most before you go to bed, or as you're walking in a beautiful park and you feel like you want to talk to Hashem, that's a wonderful thing, that's beautiful, then it's totally permitted to invent prayers. But if you're in the middle of Shemona Esrei and you want to add on an extra prayer so that it fits seamlessly into the Shemona Esrei, that would be a problem, because that's, you know, adding on to the laws, you know, to the Shemona Esrei as it was written by Chazal. And if you feel that you can add on to what Chazal wrote, then you might feel like you can subtract from that as well. And so we say then leave the Shemona Esrei alone. Don't put extra words or extra ideas into Shemona Esrei. Save the invented prayers for your personal conversations with the Kaddish Baruch Hu on your own time, right? When you're taking a walk, before you go to sleep, that's when it's admirable to talk to Hashem in your own language. During Shemona Esrei, we just say the words of Shemona Esrei. During the formal davening of Shacharis, Mincha, and Ma'ariv, we stick to the words that were instituted by the authors of the Siddur. What are some things we do to make davening feel less like a burden? So here we talked about the way that you act turns into the way that you think, which turns into the way that you feel. So we do certain actions. That is how we would act if we enjoy davening and wanted to prolong it. And we hope that that's going to filter down to how we think about davening, that we'll want it to last longer, and how we feel about davening, that we'll actually come to enjoy it. So we talk about bowing down, that we straighten up from the bow slowly. We first straighten the head and then the body afterwards. The idea there is we want to do it in two stages to show we want to prolong it. It's not a burden to us. It's something that we enjoy and appreciate. When we take the three steps back from Shemona Esrei, we take the steps back heel to toe, not long steps, because we don't act like we're running away from Shemona Esrei. Hopefully, if we don't act that way, we'll come to feel this is not something we want to run away from. After we take the three steps back and finish saying Oseh Shalom Bimromov and the Yehi Ratzon, we're supposed to wait, not take the three steps forward right away. Wait for Kedusha. If you're davening alone, or if you finished after the Chazan said Kedusha, then wait the amount of time that it takes to walk 6 feet, 4 amos. Again, if you go back right away, you're acting like davening is a burden, and you'll come to feel like it's a burden. If you wait a little bit, you're acting like it's enjoyable, and you'll come to actually enjoy it. What are two places in Hilchos Tefillah where we see the heart represents feelings and emotions? So one of them is when we hit our heart for Slach Lanu. We're basically saying it's our feelings, our emotions, our desires that temporarily got the better of us and made us do Averas. And so we're blaming our desires and our feelings for making us do the Averas. But the me, who I really am, I don't want to do Averos. I'm not proud of my Averos. It was a temporary weakness which let the feelings and desires take control of us. And that's why we hit our chest during Slach Lanu, because the chest, the heart, it represents the feelings and the desires. The second place we saw earlier was by the tefillin, where the hand tefillin are pointing at the heart to remind us that we should direct our desires and our feelings and our emotions towards the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? A person enjoy eating, so that enjoyment should be directed to Hashem. You should eat in order to get energy, to learn, in order to feel good, so that you can learn better. Eat on Shabbos, eat on Yontif when it's a mitzvah, learn a lot of Torah so that you can make siyums to learn in order to may have, but again, it's the desire for food which is being channeled to help us do mitzvos and do the right thing. And so that's the idea, that we put the tefillin pointing at the heart to remind us that we should channel our desires to help us, to inspire us to be better Jews. Why do people have a custom to stand on tiptoes for Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh? So here we discuss two reasons. The reason that the Mishnah Brura gives is that standing on tiptoes and looking upwards is a posture that that is a sort of romantic posture to remind us that that there's a mitzvah of Ahavas Hashem, of loving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't have a form, he's not visible or touchable, but at the same time, the Torah tells us we are capable of coming to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu, think about who HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. Historically, he created the world, he took the Jews out of Egypt. How does HaKadosh Baruch Hu act with connection to the world? He's Tov Lakol, he's good to all. Racham Aval Kol Ma'asav, he's merciful to all of his creatures. Karov Hashem L'chol Korav, he's loyal. Right? People who call out to him, right, he responds to them. Shomer Hashem Eskalo Avav, the people who love him, Hashem protects them. Right? There's that loyalty relationship there. HaKadosh Baruch Hu stands for compassion. He stands for fairness. Hashem Shomer Eskerim, Yasom V'Almana Yodeid, those people who have the fewest to protect them. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there the most, to make sure that they, that they're not taken advantage of. And these are things that we can think about that make, I think, Ahavas Hashem a little bit easier. Again, there are other ways of approaching Ahavas Hashem as well, of loving Hashem. But again, the Kedusha, according to the Mishnah Brura, that particular tiptoes and gazing upwards is a sign of affection and of love. And it reminds us, Sivya, I'm recording.
Wait, are you
I'm recording.
What?
I'm recording.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah. So. So. What are two things that we do to increase our concentration during davening? So both of these, the things that we studied, were during the first pasuk of Shema. We cover our eyes so that we're not distracted by whatever we're looking at. That way we can concentrate better. And it's a minhag to say the pasuk louder than the rest of davening, because when you say the words of davening loud, you can concentrate on them better. We said that the minhag in yeshiva is for everybody to say the entire Shema out loud in order to concentrate better on the entire Shema. What is the proper volume for reading Shmon Esrei? It shouldn't be too loud, and it shouldn't be too quiet. So it's too loud. It's too loud if the person next to you can hear it. It's too quiet if you yourself can't hear it. It should be loud enough that you can hear, but quiet enough that your neighbor cannot hear it. What reason did the Mishnah Brura give for this halacha? So the Mishnah Brura said that it shows that we believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is omniscient, that Hashem is all-knowing. The ancient idol worshippers used to scream their prayers, because they thought that their idols were sometimes hard of hearing and that they needed to scream in order to get their attention or in order for them to hear. But we believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows everything, even what we're thinking, and therefore there's no need to scream davening. So we whisper the davening as a sign of emunah, as a sign of faith that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is all-knowing. However, we're not supposed to daven just with thinking, because thinking, if we just thought, it would be very hard to concentrate, very easy to get distracted. And when you actually voice the words of davening, it's easier to concentrate. And that brings us to the next question. If you meet two conditions, you can daven Shmona Esrei out loud. What are these conditions? So number one, it has to be that it helps you concentrate better. And number two, it has to be in private. If you're in public, you can't daven out loud, even if it helps you concentrate better, because the concentration of the people around you is more important than your own concentration. And so we daven quietly so that the people next to us can concentrate. But if you're in private and there's nobody around you who's going to be disturbed by your davening out loud, so then, if it helps you concentrate better, you're allowed to daven out loud. What are some things that are not allowed prior to Shmona Esrei? So we mentioned three things. Number one is eating and drinking. Number two is traveling. Number three is learning Torah. What are the reasons why these things are not allowed? So the Shulchan Aruch explained that eating, drinking, and traveling are not allowed, because they very often are selfish. Why are you eating? Because you want to enjoy the taste. Why are you eating? Because you want to be full of energy, right? Why are you traveling? Because you want to earn money, or you want to go to an amusement park or on a road trip. So you're supposed to, right, we start off our day with a reminder that we live our lives not for our own pleasure, but we're supposed to live a selfless existence. We're supposed to live our lives for others. And therefore, we should never put ourselves first in terms of our daily schedule. The first thing that we do should be tefillah, should be dedicating ourselves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to something outside of ourselves. So that's for eating, drinking, and traveling. When it comes to learning, there's a different reason, and that is that learning Torah is addictive. It's a type of thing that once you start, it's very, very difficult to stop. You start researching a topic, you start reading a sefer, it's very hard to put it down. And so we're nervous that if you start to learn Torah, that you might end up learning and learning and learning and totally forget to daven on time. And so that's why you're not supposed to learn Torah before davening Shmona Esrei of Shacharis. But because of these reasons, there are exceptions. So what are three examples of when you are allowed to eat before davening, when it's not a selfish eating? Example number one, if you're eating in order to concentrate better on davening. If you know for certain that you're not going to be able to concentrate properly, like on Shavuos morning and you're exhausted, and you know that you need coffee or that you need to have a Danish, you know, in order to be awake for davening, for concentrate on davening, so you don't fall asleep in the middle. So you're not eating the Danish. You're not eating the Danish because you want to enjoy the taste. You probably already had 10 Danishes already and you're sick of them. You're just eating the Danish to give you energy for davening. So that would be a selfless act of eating, and it's allowed. The second example is if the doctor told you that you need to eat for your health, so then you would be allowed to eat, because again, you're not doing it for enjoyment, you're doing it for the mitzvah of staying healthy. The third example is water. Water is allowed before davening, because drinking water is considered almost hydrating yourself. It's almost like something that you do to maintain your health, and not so much because you think you're more important than a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Putting my stomach before Hashem's tefillos, that's not the case by water. It's a very humble type of drink, and so it's not really putting yourself first. What are two examples of when you're allowed to travel before davening? So again, the basic rule is that if it's selfless travel, so then it's allowed. So let's say to travel to the Kosel, to daven at the Kosel, to travel to your Rebbe, to daven in his minion, to travel to daven in a minion, right, which has a better atmosphere, where your friends, you know, who also cherish davening are davening, you're traveling not for yourself, but for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and so that's going to be allowed. What are three examples of when you're allowed to learn Torah before davening? So again, this is, you know, the whole concern is that learning Torah is addictive. You might come to just forget about davening entirely. So when that's not a concern, you'd be allowed. What are three examples of this? Number one, if you're learning in a place where a minion will eventually assemble and daven, so you can count on the fact that somebody from the minion is going to tap you on the shoulder and remind you that davening has begun, right? Or that maybe when the chazan starts to daven, you'll remember that davening has begun. It's learning at home that's an issue, because then you might forget to leave your house and go to the minion. Another example is if you ask somebody, a friend or a family member, to remind you when it's time to daven. So if you ask a parent or a sibling, please come and find me, 7:55, so that way I'll get to shul on time. You can count on that you're not going to get carried away by your learning, and you're allowed to start learning because you can feel confident they'll remind you and that you won't miss davening. The third example works for some people but not for others, is if you set an alarm, if you're the type of person who generally heeds your alarms and listens to them, so then you can count on that. If you're the type of person who usually ignores their alarms, so then you probably should use one of the other situations. What halachos teach us how important it is to stay healthy? So we mentioned one, that if your doctor says you need to eat, you can eat even before davening. And the second one we talked about was we're mechallel Shabbos in order to save someone's life. Even if there's only a chance that your Chilul Shabbos will save someone's life, you're allowed to do it, because survival is more important than 610 out of the 613 mitzvos, the three cardinal, mitzvos, right? Avodah, not to do Avodah Zarah, not to do Gilui Arayos, and not to murder. Those are more important than survival, but survival is more important than the other 610 mitzvos. What are some things we do during davening to remind us to be humble? So we talked about wearing a yarmulke. We're not the top of the world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is on top of us. And then we added on to that, we daven indoors. That's supposed to help remind us to be brokenhearted, was the words of the Mishnah Brura, which we said was associated with humility. Also maybe davening in a low place, not on a pedestal, or a stage or a platform, that might also be to remind us to be humble. The words of Shimon Esrei Guys pointed out also remind us of that. We're asking Hashem for money, we're asking Hashem for health, we're asking Hashem for wisdom, we're asking Hashem for shiduchim. That just reminds us that we're not all powerful. We need HaKadosh Baruch Hu's help if we want to get the things that we want. And so the words of Shimon Esrei themselves also remind us about being humble, that that we're not all powerful. Only HaKadosh Baruch Hu is all powerful. What are five places we should not stand during davening? So the Shulchan Aruch counts. He says, don't stand on a bed or on a chair or on a bench. Those are three. And he also says, don't stand on any place that's high up. If it's not sufficiently wide, don't stand on a high place. And he also says that you shouldn't stand in the open, like in a field. What are two reasons why we should not daven in these places? So when it comes to the bed and the chair and the bench in the high place, the Mishnah Berurah says that you should not daven there because you're going to be so concentrating on keeping your balance that you won't be able to concentrate properly on davening. So we want a person to daven in a place that helps him concentrate best. There are two cases, though, that one is allowed to daven on a stage. There's really three cases. One case is when a person is, let's say, not feeling well, and he's already on the stage, so we don't make him bother himself by coming off because he's not feeling well, so we want him to conserve his energy for recuperating, and we're not going to make him get off of that stage in order to daven Shmon Esrei on the floor. The second case is a chazan, who needs to stand on a high place in order for the congregation, for the people to hear him. So in that case, helping out the tzibur is worth sacrificing a little bit of kavana. And then we also talked about if the stage is more than four square amos in area, so then you know that's wide enough that a person is not worried about keeping his balance, and it will be allowed to daven on that stage as well. In addition to the concern that he can't concentrate because he's busy keeping his balance, we also said that if you daven indoors, that's conducive to Yiras Shamayim and to humility. Person who davens out of doors, it's a little bit harder to get that same sense of formality and of dependence as one experiences indoors. And so davening indoors is conducive to Yiras Shamayim and to being humble.